Well, now to the last of our Singapore reports. We've been saving it from the trip that I did in June this year. And straight off the plane from Singapore, Sydney to Singapore, our producer Kate McDonald met the economist's John Fassman, whom we've spoken to before, to talk about his true passion, not macroeconomic policy, but food. We usually talk to him about events and analysis in the region, but here he talks to Kate about how food is the glue to Singaporean ethnic groups and culture, going back to our second interview in this program, and how the hawker scene is changing.
Well, we're at the East Coast Lagoon Food Centre, which is a hawker centre all the way out on the east coast of Singapore, right by the Singapore Strait. This is probably one of the sort of five or six best hawker centers in Singapore. So at its heart, all a hawker center is a place where people who used to be street vendors, itinerant street vendors, were brought to sell food. So this one, this particular hawker center is known for its barbecued seafood. Let's take a walk around and see what they have here. So you have a range of sauces. You have this one is very simple, otah, steamed fish paste. Been here for a long time. This is rojak and grilled tofu. Rojak is a very Singaporean dish. It's sort of a chopped up fried dough, vegetables, a salad, and sort of shrimp paste. You can usually tell where the good places are by how long the line is in front of them. So it's a Thursday night. On weekends, this place is packed up. It's a Thursday tonight. You've got a noodle place. You've got seafood here. You can see the mud crabs right in that in the cage there, very fresh. A lot of these places sell, you can't really tell from the, you know, except by trial and error, which is good and which is bad. So you can see a lot of places sell the same thing. Grilled chicken, curry puff, also very Singaporean. So it's good to come here. I usually come here about once a month with my wife and kids. They've become Hawker Center pros. This is an unusual Singaporean food. It's black and white carrot cake. It's not really carrot. It's a daikon radish that's chopped up and mixed with egg to bind it. It's almost like an omelet. Stodgy, greasy, delicious. It's great morning after food. Yeah, so this is it. There are probably about 60 or 70 stalls here. And a great night out is to come with four people, eight people, pick a table, and then sort of divide and conquer and have a feast.
So, John, you've just walked us around and showed us all the great food stores here. Someone wrote, to ask what is Singaporean food is almost to ask and discover what is a Singaporean. Like, do you agree with that comment?
I think that's broadly true. I think, you know, Singapore is a diverse, multicultural country. You have a majority that's Chinese, and you've got Malay and South Indian minorities. And there are foods that you can find here that you can't find anywhere else. And Singapore really uses food as a marker of national identity like nowhere I've ever been before. You have Peranakan food, which is the sort of national food, which is a Peranakan is someone who is born of who is Chinese Malay by ethnicity. And so the food is a mashup of mostly Cantonese, Hokkien food and Malay food. And that is something that Singaporeans are very proud of. They're very proud of their food. The government has also made food a marketing tool. You know, it's marketed itself as a food destination, and it's done it very well. And you have good food at every level here.
So because of that mix with the different ethnic groups, does that help with the glue of the Singaporean culture as well? Like, they all love their food, and that's something that, you know, if they're different in other ways, that they can all unite.
Yes, and there is in housing blocks, the ethnicity of a housing block is required by law to reflect the ethnicity of the country as a whole. So they're very conscious of avoiding racial ghettos. And so when you have that mix in a housing block, people eat each other's foods. There are holidays that everybody is invited to, sort of government-sponsored events that everybody's invited to. You eat each other's food and you sit down with each other across from a table. And it's a way of breaking down barriers.
The place we're at the moment, the Seafood Market Centre, it is very much Singaporeans getting out and eating together, not being at home in their kitchens or in their dining rooms.
Yes, well, hawker centres are big for that reason. Apartments here tend to be quite small. And it's also, as you can feel, it's really hot. So the last thing you want to do when you get home is fire up your stove and cook at home. So people do eat out a lot more here than I imagine they do elsewhere. And going out becomes very social. I mean, you look around, you see tables of six people, eight people, different ethnicities sitting together. You've got friends, you've got families, and it's a way of meeting and talking.
Is this a more of a traditional hawker center, would you say?
I think this is one of the showcase hawker centers in Singapore. You know, a hawker center at root is just a place to buy a quick meal. And so every bus station, every train station will have some sort of hawker center, you know, 8 or 10 little restaurants where you can get some rice and fish and vegetables for $3. This one, you really have people who have been here for a long time. People come here for barbecued seafood. You can feel there's a nice breeze. You're right by the beach. This is one of the nicest ones.
So looking around at the people working in the stalls, they seem to be older people, so younger people, because now the education system, so many people are going to university and probably going on to careers, you know, professional careers. Is that a problem for the hawker scene?
I don't know if it's a problem. It's definitely a question. You know, you have people, as you say, there are a lot of older people who are working hawker stalls who may have come here at the time of independence and didn't mind sort of sweating over a walk for 11 hours a day. But their kids and grandkids now work in finance. And so the question of, first of all, where are the new hawkers going to come from? Well, they're going to come from different parts of China and India that the current hawkers come from. So you'll have hawker food changing. You also, interestingly, have a lot of people who are, you know, in their 30s and 40s who maybe went into the corporate world and have found second careers as hawkers. So you can go to some stalls, some hawker centers, and you have $10 a plate, very nice Italian pasta hawkers or pizza hawkers or barbecue hawkers. The hawkers are often upscaling with the country.
So I think I read about that, the hawkerpreneurs.
Hawkerpreneurs, yeah. People who do high-class food in this hawker center, it's a lovely way to eat. The food is terrific. It's very informal. You're outside. Yeah.
Is that causing any problems with the more kind of traditional hawkers?
It definitely causes price pressure, right? Because if someone is going to pay $16 for a plate of hawker food, where does that leave the $3 a plate guy? Who's dependent on who? You know, there are a lot of people who are really dependent on those $3 meals for their two meals a day. And so where does that leave them? Do the rents go up to match the hawkerpreneurs? Yeah.
So what's the best business model, do you think, as an economist correspondent?
That is a great question. I think the best business model, as always, is to just focus on quality and hope the rest will take care of itself.
For you as a foodie, because usually we talk to you about the drug war in Philippines or about Indonesian elections, what's this like for you coming to Singapore?
I have been a passionate eater and cook for longer than I've been doing anything else. And so this is a country where people are conversant about two things above all, food and economics. It's heaven.
Now, John, can I ask you a non-food question then? You're about to leave Singapore as the correspondent, the economist correspondent based here. There's lots of changes that are happening in the region. Where do you see Singapore in the next couple of years or so?
I think that Singapore has to be very nervous these days about the quality and extent of American leadership. Singapore has always balanced itself very well between China and the West. And I think people are worried that the United States may be looking elsewhere, that it may have sort of taken its thumb off the scale. And that leaves Singapore in a very uncomfortable position. It has always said to America, don't make us choose. We want to have good relations with you and with China. And the fear was always that America would insist that they choose the United States in a blatant way. Well, the fear now is that the choice may have been thrust onto them. So I think when you look at the leadership out of the United States, at Trump's sort of transactional mercantilism, the fear is that China may be the big winner, not just in Singapore, but in the region as a whole.
Okay, John, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.